The other thing that I want to talk about, I heard questions coming from the floor to Jay Adams time after time again about unbelieving husbands and believing wives. You're standing here before you is something that I want to read to you, and I'm going to give you a testimony about that just very thing. It says, wives, in the same way, and this is, by the way, in 1 Peter 3, starting with verse 1. Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives. You're looking at somebody who's going to teach you about Christian counseling today, who's been won over by the behavior of his wife. My wife has passed away this past June. If in fact she were still alive, she would still be here with us. And today, there's no question about it in my mind. But I was a person who did not know the Lord. And quite honestly, I was not a very pleasant person to live with. And yet she went ahead and she put this into practice, believing that God would make the difference. That's where we have a resource. Remember when Jay Adams says, what we have in our bag? Well, we have the resources of an almighty God in our bag. And his promises are true, and we can accept them, and we can take them. So I want you to take that on real authority, that God is in the midst of what we can do here today. So without any further having to say anything about that, we do need the resources of God. There's no question about it. I've had to depend on his resources recently with the loss of my wife. Didn't realize how much I depended on that woman until I lost her. I loved her dearly, but God can still, in the midst of the most horrible crisis, minister to you. I can say that. So, what do we do when somebody has a problem? That's the real issue, and so let's get into it. And by the way, I passed out three different sheets, and I want to make sure that you all have them. You should have a copy of the PowerPoint demonstration, something that says AQ1 at the top that says taken from Introduction to Biblical Counseling, and then you should have personal data inventory. You should have three documents. If you don't have them all, raise your hand, and okay. Somebody come up. There's a couple of people who don't have those documents. Would you do it again for me, please? Thank you. As she's passing out the documents, I'm going to go ahead and get started. One of the things that's going to happen to you when somebody comes to you for help is they're going to have an agenda. They have a problem that they want you to fix. That's usually the way it goes. They could have emotional problems, like I've got anxiety, depression, I'm crying all the time. They've got something that's really bothering them. Or it could be a problem with someone in the family. I find often that when I'm doing marital counseling, that my wife and I did marital counseling for over 20 years, that each person coming to the marital counseling wants us to change the other person. That's their agenda. You know, the husband and wife comes. The husband is coming because he wants us to change the wife. The wife is coming because he wants us to change the husband. That's their agenda. I found that true almost all of the time. So they come with an agenda. And it could be also a problem of hallucination. One of the things is that some people see things the rest of us don't. And the issue is, why does that happen? We got to look at that issue. And people get worried that they might be going crazy if they hear or see things that the rest of us don't see. And that's a very possibility. Jay talked about the fact that lack of sleep and drugs and other kinds of things can bring these things to pass. So if, in fact, people are seeing and hearing things that others of us are not seeing or hearing, we need to look into this very carefully. Could be that somebody's just lonely and needs somebody to talk. You know, they just want to hear something from somebody else. And it could be that someone wants to commit suicide. In my lifetime so far, I was just talking to Lori here at lunchtime, that I've had six people call me saying that they wanted to commit suicide, either call me or talk to me saying they want to commit suicide. What do you want to do at that point? And obviously, if they wanted to commit suicide, They would have done it by now. So they've got a real problem that needs to do that. So the counselee wants you to provide a quick remedy to the problem. Well, how do you respond to that? You have to have an agenda. Well, come on. Here we go. You have to establish the agenda. I think I'm going to get away from the podium. I can get better control here. I'm going to get closer to you even. And anyway, one of the things that you need to do is you need to bring God into the equation. Without God in the equation, we can go nowhere. I think Jay did a wonderful job talking about this. If we've got somebody who's not a Christian, then the first thing we have is bringing them to know the Lord. If we have a Christian, then we know immediately we've got to bring the God into the equation. The second thing we need to do is we need to let the counselee know that we're going to bring a Christian and a biblical approach to what we're doing. So that's one of the things that we need to do right from the beginning. I teach sociology for the University of Delaware, and some people think it's a good idea to come to me because of my credentials. Well, I let them know, if you're coming to me for counsel and you're coming to me for help, I have a particular way of looking at the world. And it's through the eyes of the Scripture. And so I'm going to look at your problem that way. And I think it's incumbent upon you to tell your person that you're dealing with that that's the direction you're headed. And then I want to get into the nuts and bolts. That's what I'm good at, I think. Talking about the nuts and bolts of what you really have to do. And one of the first things you really need to do is you need to collect data. When you go to the mechanic, he says, what's wrong with your car? And if your brakes don't work, you don't say, well, I step on the accelerator and it goes and goes and goes. What you do is you say, I push on the brake and it doesn't work, you see? And one of the things that's really difficult, though, in terms of getting good data is asking the right questions. Because people, when they're dealing with their own personal problems, have stronger emotions than when they're dealing with their car. You understand that, don't you? Their emotions are so strong they can become overwhelming so that we're not going to get good answers. And it gets to be very important from my perspective and from yours, if you're the counselor, to get the right kinds of answers. We just can't gather their emotions. That doesn't get us anywhere. Most of the time we can see all their emotions. We need to gather the facts that bring them to the point of these emotions so that we can deal with the issues that are creating the problem. So how do we go about collecting data? Well, first of all, we need to know the types of data to collect. We need to collect physical data. Their sleep patterns are extremely important. Their eating patterns. Any outstanding or unusual events in their physical life. We need to collect data on their resources, who their church family is, who are they related to in terms of Christian friends and support. We also need to be sure that one is a believer and has the Holy Spirit helping them. What about their emotions? What emotions is the person feeling right now? What kind of self-control does the person show even though they're talking about the emotions? What kinds of actions have the person taken in the past? I'm going through these very quickly. At the end of the thing, you'll see that I have a much more pronounced thing, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut it short. I'm a college professor, and as a college professor, I design my lectures to go an hour and 15 minutes, and I'm probably set into a habit pattern, so I'm going to have to maybe try and trail how I handle this. Then the thoughts and intentions. What are they thinking about? What do they care about? What are they really concerned about? Because you see, as a Christian counselor, as Jay Adams told us earlier, we've got to work from the inside out. We're not going to manipulate somebody to make them act a particular kind of way. The change has got to come from the heart. And then the historical background. What history do we need to know in order to understand this person's problem? So there are the types of data that you need to be prepared to collect. How can I collect this data? That's a very important question, and one of the reasons that I brought along some of the material that I did. I brought along this piece of material right here. What I did is I took our name off of the personal data inventory. And if you'll look at this, you'll see that this will collect a lot of data about the individual before you even get to meet them. One of the things that we try to do here at the Counseling Center is if somebody makes an appointment and we have several days before the appointment, we mail this out to them, asking them to come to the appointment with this already filled out. If they come with this already filled out, we have a lot of information that we already need to know, and we collected it in a very efficient form. One of the things that I've done is I've put this form on disk so that if you want to put your own name on it or you want to change some of the things, you don't like some of the questions I have or want to add some questions to it, you can go and take this, put it into your computer, and use it. I brought about 7. So if you think you're interested in having this for your church, I brought these along, and I'll have them here for you at the end of the session. I'm not going to go through everything the personal data inventory collects. That's one of the reasons that I printed it up for you, so you have a copy so you know what to collect. Because, quite honestly, we could spend the whole day going through this, and there's other things that I'd like to cover. There are reasons to use this personal data inventory. Many times, you can do it, first of all, like I suggested earlier. Something else it does for you is it saves you time, interview time. It gives you the basic information you need before you start counseling. This gives us a place also that locates peripheral problems. I had a woman come to me recently who was bulimic. And so I had her fill out this form prior to coming. And one of the things that I saw in terms of just looking at the form is that the family's budget was all out of whack. If a budget's all out of whack and you're scrambling to pay the bills, it's going to create anxiety. I happen to know that from personal experience. Maybe some of you know that. And if you know that, then you say, there's a peripheral problem tied to her reason for coming. And so one of the things that it did is it showed me immediately that I had to deal with a peripheral problem after I dealt with the immediate problem. And it's interesting in terms of this person came, and one of the things that I had her do, and I'm going to just tell you about this in terms of collecting information, is that I found out that she was really running. You know, she was running to this, she was running to that, she was running to someplace else. And I wanted to know when the problem was occurring. When is a good question to ask? And so I said, okay, well, one of the things I want you to do is I want you to keep me a schedule of everything you do every day. And she about fainted. I said, all I want you to do is tell me what you're doing. And so she did. She kept that diary for 7 days. And after 7 days, she says, that's all I can do. And she brought it along with her. But when she brought it along with her and her husband came along, he had looked at this diary and he said, I didn't realize how much my wife was doing. And he said, her and I agreed that she doesn't have to work anymore. That is, she had several peripheral jobs, part-time jobs, that she was running to with the children and other kinds of things. And after her husband saw this, he said, we have to solve this problem of your running everywhere. By the way, she was changed in terms of her bulimic behavior within a period of 5 weeks. Remember Jay said 6 weeks will do it? Well, there's some peripheral problems we're still dealing with in terms of the family, but in terms of her bulimia, she said this Thanksgiving, this is the first Thanksgiving in 16 years that I didn't binge and purge. So it's possible, you see, to make a big difference in people's lives if, in fact, you collect the right information and pursue the right kinds of things to do. Of course, God has got to be the major resource again. You realize this? I'm going to go through these very quickly. Using the PDI does several things. It will indicate to the person that you're dealing with that you care to be thorough. One of the things you'll find out is we want to know what medications the person is taking. Medications can cause somebody to hallucinate. It can cause other kinds of problems in their life. We want to know what those medications are. There's a whole raft of other things that are in there, so it does tell that. Another of the things that it does for me, it provides me a constant access to basic information. One of the things that people do is I try to be personable when I'm talking to somebody, and I forget names. I really do. I have a terrible time with names. And so when they come and they're talking about the children, one of the things I do is I review the PDI, and I get all their children's names down before so that when they're talking about them, I have them. But I keep that PDI there so that I have that all the time. It helps me prepare for the session. What are some things that are going on in their lives that I need to deal with? And so it sets up my agenda. Remember when Jay Adams said, well, I keep my agenda and then I keep what the client's agenda is? Well, you see, I come in with an agenda based on some of the things I've seen in the PDI and things they've said before. And that's where that agenda comes from. And so it gives you a point. And then, of course, one of the nice things is if you have the PDI, you can say, I noticed this on your PDI. Could you give me more information about that? And it gives you a jumping off point on some things that you would have never approached had you not taken the time to collect that data. Okay. What kinds of questions do we ask? Well, we should ask questions that allow people to talk about issues. Questions such as, when did this problem begin? Who were you with when that happened? What were you doing when that occurred? You notice the kinds of questions that I ask don't have the word why in it. Why did you do that? If I were to come and ask you today, why did you come? You'd have to think of some reason. If you're sitting there picking your nose, that's an awful habit, by the way, that I happen to have. I'd like to get changed, but I have that habit. If somebody were to ask me, why do you pick your nose? I would be hard-pressed to come up with a reason. A lot of bad habits are that way. You understand that? If we ask people why they're doing something, what you're going to do is you're going to put them into a corner to come up with an answer. We don't want to put people into a corner. If you ask the question, when did it happen, then they're searching their history. Who did it happen with? Then you're searching their history. When did it happen? And you're asking questions that are going to get to facts, not some supposition that comes from somewhere. You see, if you ask me why I pick my nose, I'm going to have to come up with a supposition. The supposition may or may not be true. Whereas we gather facts, we're going to get to what the real issues are. One of the other things we need to do is we need to target recent behavior. When was the last time that happened? What were you doing at that time? Who were you with at the time? You see, one of the things that I wanted to do with this lady, and the reason I had her write the diary, is I wanted to know what were the events prior to her going into binging. If I had the prior events into binging, then I think I can interrupt into that behavior and change it. You see, there's usually things that lead from one set of behavior patterns to another. I get hungry, then I eat, you see? And so there's presuppositions many times in terms of the kinds of things when they happen. By asking the right kinds of questions, we can get to what's motivating that person's behavior. Questions need to be thoughtful and gracious. We need, as Christian counselors, to let our speech always be with grace, seasoned, as it were, with salt. I'm going to tell you myself. One of the best ways probably to learn is from somebody else's mistake. So you don't have to make this mistake. I made it. I had a young man come to me for counseling. And this young man had problems with his wife. His wife had problems with him. And anyway, I saw that he needed to change some behaviors. And he got rather rambunctious with me, if you understand what I mean. He was rejecting my advice, and he was quite vocal about it. And quite honestly, I really got up on my high horse and gave him a real run over in terms of a Henry Nice style. I mean, you know, I'm teaching with authority right now, and can you imagine what I could do to an individual if I'm really getting angry? I can come in with the authority of a locomotive and run him over. And I did. I became almost physically threatening in terms of the way I approached that individual. And he didn't ever want to come back again. And I couldn't imagine why. Here I am, giving him all this good advice, getting him straightened out, and he didn't ever want to come back again. You know what I had to do? I had to recognize that Henry Nice didn't do this. And then I had to do something else that a Christian has to do when they sin. What does a Christian have to do when they sin? Yeah, I had to go and ask for forgiveness to my counselee. That's what I had to do. You see, I had made an error. I was wrong. I shouldn't do that. And so one of the things we need to do is we need to let it, don't make my mistake. One of the other things we need to do is we need to stay relevant. I'm going to guarantee you, somebody who doesn't want to get their problem solved and just want to sit and talk about it, they will take you down every rabbit trail there is. One of the things I do is I head people off of rabbit trails. I want to stay focused on recent behavior, recent issues, and get things straightened away. I'm not going to go all the way back to when they were in second grade. Second grade might be important to him, but second grade is not going to change the issues that we have to deal with today. And so what we do is we make them stay focused, if we're going to be effective, on the real issues that need to be changed. And the other thing is we're going to gather facts. I passed out this sheet. That's where it says, I want you to see sheet AQ1. You'll see AQ1 up the corner. By the way, it comes from a good book. I'm recommending that you might want to look at this book, Introduction to Biblical Counseling by John MacArthur and Wayne Mack. They've got some really good stuff in there. Anyway, the wrong way to ask a question. I'm going to just go through the first box there. You see, Bruce and Maggie appear with their daughter Karen, and the counselor is surprised. He expected only the parents. And then the counselor says, you see what the question is? Why are you here, Karen? And what does she do? She shrugs her shoulders. And then Maggie says, I asked her to come. She and I can't get along, and it's wrecking our home. Counselor, do you see a problem between you and your mom? Karen says, yes, you know. And then the counselor, would you say there's animosity between you and mom? And then she hesitates a little, much, and she gets really emphatic. Then the counselor does this again. Why is there a problem? You see, asking the wrong questions. Karen says, I don't know. That's what she's going to say, especially the daughter. And then the counselor, Karen, do you know you are to honor your mother? It's a sin not to you. Do you see this as a sin? And she says, yes. Why haven't you made a move? Then here we go again. Why haven't you made a move? And then she says, I don't know again. Oh, yeah, teenagers are great for I don't knows, by the way. I don't know if you know that, but you can get a lot of I don't knows out of a teenager. But you can get some out of adults, too, especially if you ask lots of questions why. Whereas down here, you can see there's another way to do it. What you see is there are open questions rather than closed questions. And one of the things that I've done is I've given you a whole series of questions under topics. You'll see there's one under physical. You'll see there's questions under resources. You'll see there's questions under emotions, actions. What you need to do is just look at those and then incorporate them in your own style. I mean, you don't have to ask those questions that way specifically, but ask them the way you would ask them. So there are a whole series of questions, and it does show you the difference between an open and closed question. And what you want to do is you want to have an open question as an invitation for people to disclose themselves. And so the idea is to use open questions, and I provided a whole series of them, and I just don't have time to go through all of them. A one-day session doesn't provide for that. What else do you need to do? You need to keep notes on the answers. You should have a notepad. You should have paper and pencil ready. And if counselees have a problem with that, you say, the only way that I can effectively handle the issues that you bring up is for me to know what you're saying. And so I'm going to keep notes on what you have to say. And you need to pay careful attention. And you need to write down important points that the client gives you. There are good reasons to take notes. One is it allows you to know where you left off. If you have an hour session, you're not going to get it all accomplished in 1 hour. You're just not. And so you know where you ended. So that's what notes are. And the other thing that's really key is it gives you an opportunity to check on the truthfulness of your counselee's answers. You keep asking questions long enough, it's hard to keep on lying time after time after time. The lies will change because most people, not everybody, but most people cannot lie consistently. The other thing is to make sure you pay attention to the non-verbal things that people show you. One of the things that I noticed with the bulimic person that I was talking about is I noticed how anxious she got when she was talking about how she was going to pay for gas. And I recognized that the anxiety was coming from economic things, and so I made the point, I'm going to make the budget key to the next session. And so that was a real crucial thing in terms of reducing the anxiety in those persons' lives, is to get some kind of handle on the money situation in their family. You got to watch eye and hand movements in particular. Eye and hand movements. When you have two people together, especially husbands and wives, wives are great. The husband will tell you one thing, right? And the wife starts rolling her eyes. And she'll let you know, this is not the way she sees it. And so if you keep your eye on these things, it really helps you out in terms of pursuing questions. And sometimes I'll just go and say, well, I noticed the way you rolled your eyes there. And then she's, oh, she was just waiting for that section. And then, of course, we get to hear some. One of the important things you need to do is to learn to keep some of the emotions to yourself. One of the things that you have to do is you have to learn how not to show shock or disbelief when your client tells you something you're not prepared to hear. I'm going to tell you, Christians get involved in almost anything that's out there. And you have a good upstanding member of the church, and he comes into you and tells you that he's into pornographic films, right? And you might, oh, not you. That's what your immediate reaction would be, right? You have this fine, upstanding man you've been looking up to and you think is a model, and then you find this out and you say, you know, you don't want to hear that. Or you might hear something else even more shocking than that. What do you do? Try to keep your disposition neutral. It does require that you try to keep a neutral disposition when you hear these things that you were not prepared to hear. It's better to be prepared for almost anything. And so that way you won't be shocked. But I'm going to tell you, there's going to be that time they move in on you and you just weren't ready for what they laid on you. It is permissible, however, to show emotions at some time. Sometimes it's okay to cry with a client. One of the really wonderful things that it was when I was counseling with my wife and I counseled in our home together for many, many years. What made it really good is my wife could empathize with things. There were times when I couldn't, or I wouldn't, either one, and sometimes both. But my wife could, and my wife brought a tenderness to the counseling session that I normally don't bring. And that really made a difference. So being able to show some emotion, sometimes it's okay. It's also okay to project power sometimes when you're in the middle of a session. That is, if in fact the client's constantly taking down rabbit trails, you have to say, now look, you're taking us in directions we don't need to go. We're wasting our time. Now I want you to stop this. I want you to answer the questions I'm asking. Sometimes you have to do that. You have to be directive. If you just listen, you might not get it done. You do need to allow the client to share without hindrance, no matter what the problem happens to be when you're collecting data. I had a problem once in terms of being asked into to counsel my own pastor years ago. And by virtue of the fact that I had the sociology degree, the pastor and his wife called me in, and I stopped them in the middle of collecting data because I had gotten to the point I just didn't want to hear. Carefully taken notes, and then I would have been able to move on the problem, but I didn't. And there was a failure in my life in terms of my counseling that time. I know it. I recognize it now. Wish I could have it back, but I can't. All I can do is ask God for forgiveness. I want you to know that collection of data doesn't all happen at once. That is, sometimes you don't get to know everything about the client the first time you meet them. People don't want to tell you everything about themselves the first time they meet you, or the first time they're into a counseling session. So that's one of the important things of taking notes, so that you know there's more to it many times. And you'll write yourself a note. I didn't get to everything I need to know. And so you need to come and get back to that. And sometimes you need to give them things that their homework assignment will give you some ideas. Jay gave us one of those today when he was saying 100 things about something, I don't know, how you're an awful husband. If you do that, then of course you're going to find some of the things that they're doing. And so I suggested one in terms of the person who was bulimic, that they go home and give me a schedule of everything they're doing. Quite honestly, the outcome was quite different than I expected. I was looking for the trigger of her binging. That's what I was really after, and got a trigger for her husband to change what was going on in their life, which was interesting. One of the things you also need to do while you're doing this is you need to give your client hope. You got to give them something positive to do from the very first session. From the very first session, you got to give them hope. Something to do which is going to help them correct the problem. If you don't do that, there's no hope. All you've done is listen. So from the very first session, you have to at least get enough information, and this is where the PDI is helpful, at least get enough information so that you can give them something where they're going to begin making progress the very first time you meet them. One of the other things that I do in the very first session, by the way, is I try to get the person to agree with me to meet a certain period of time for over a period of weeks. I want you to agree with me that we're going to take some time over about 8 to 10 weeks to meet and get this problem done. Jay does it faster than I, obviously. He does it in 6 weeks, he says. I lots of times need 8 to 12 weeks. So I try to get people to agree firsthand that they're going to spend some time. You also need to, in terms of the way you project yourself, is project hope. You can't be sitting there saying, oh my, I don't know how we're going to solve this. I don't know what we're going to do. Oh, we've got a crisis. And if you're sitting there looking like that, obviously the person's not going to have any confidence in you. And even if you don't have any confidence, where do we have confidence, folks? We have an almighty God in whom we have confidence. And so we can go ahead and say we have confidence something can be done. One of the other things we want to do is we want to have the counselee take notes. Why? Why do we want to have the counselee take notes? Because many times the sessions are full of emotion, especially if it's marital counseling. I mean, sometimes, man, they really get hyper with one another. Sometimes I've gotten to the point where I see where they really act like each other in their privacy of their home, because I've asked them the right question and I just let it go long enough so I see what it's really like. And so the emotions are so strong that if you don't make them take notes on what they're going to do, they'll forget it. So you need to have them write down assignments and ask them to turn in some devotional assignments. Have them write down how God's communicating to them and what God is teaching them. One of the other things you need to do is to record the trigger for certain behaviors or thoughts. That is, and I've just gone through this, and so I'll not repeat it. It's written down for you there. And so I'm going to go in the next one because I've already covered that in just talking. One of the other things we need to do is bring in key players. What do I mean by key players? If someone else is key to the problem, ask him or her to be present. I don't like gossip. Do you like gossip? What does God say about gossip? He doesn't like it, right? And so if you're going to talk about somebody, what do we need to do? Have them present. That's what we want to do. And so if it's all possible, we want to have the other person involved in the problem there. And so individual problems often have their roots in conflicted or sinful relationships. Okay. The other person also, besides eliminating gossip, it also brings balance to the presentation. There is one exception to this when adultery is involved. Sometimes we need to get to the core of the issue. In other words, if we've got a husband and wife who are having problems and adultery's been the problem, I don't want all three of them there at the same time. You understand what I'm saying, don't you? That is, if adultery's part of the problem, I want the husband and the wife, but I don't want the other person who's been involved in the adultery. So there is an exception to everybody being involved in this situation. Yes, ma'am. One of the things that we can do is if we're at a counseling center like we do here, we'll ask one person to leave for a while and go over to another room, and I'll talk to the person privately for a while and then bring the other person back in. And I'm going to explain to the person what I'm doing. I'm going to tell them right up front. I think your wife is intimidated and afraid to tell me what's going on. I want you to leave for a few minutes so I can find out what's going on, and then I want you to come back. I'll tell them. I don't know how else to approach it, okay? By the way, if you have any other questions, I'll be glad to answer them, I suppose, if I have an answer. Oh, I'm into the kinds of data to gather, and they're on your sheet. I could spend, I think, another 45 minutes on that, so I better not do that. I'm not going to do it. You have the kinds of things. By the way, there are some things that you need to know off the one sheet. I did put on a mentalhealth.org/drug. If you want to know what the side effects of drugs are, and many times you need to know that if you're going to counsel anybody effectively, you can go to that place and look almost any drug up, and you'll know what the side effects are, what it's being used for, so that you know what you're dealing with. So that's on page, well, I don't know what page it is. Let me see here. Let me get one of the copies that you have. May I see yours? It's down here. Somewhere. Come on. It's on page 3, and which one is it? Yeah, under medications. You see it? That's a World Wide Web. It's on the net. You can look up the side effects if you've had the internet yourself. If you don't have the internet, you can get a PDR at the library, or you probably won't let you take it out. You go to the PDR at the library and you can do the same thing. It's called the physician's desk reference. I'm sorry, I use these terms. Go ahead. Huh. John, you want to answer this question?
I just walked in the door and didn't hear it.
Yeah, well, I have my answer, and other people have their answers. I don't know whether I should put my answer out in public. Go ahead and ask the question again and let John do it. Go ahead. Ask the question, Julie.